Johnson, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Martha Townsend on behalf of appellants, Mauna Kea Inoho, Royal Order of Kamehameha I, Sierra Club, Kahea, and Clarence Ku Kaukahiche. I reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. The issue before the court today is one of process. The applicant's veneer of community consultation is no substitute for the process due in this case. Mauna Kea is acknowledged as one of the most culturally sacred and ecologically significant places in all of Hawaii. It is undisputed that Native Hawaiians, like the appellants, continue to worship at Mauna Kea as they have since time immemorial. The appellants traverse ancient trails to gather food and medicine, respect their gods, and honor the birth and death of loved ones. These are the traditional and customary practices protected by our Constitution. Before the state interferes with the traditional and customary practices on Mauna Kea, the Supreme Court has made clear that it must first affirmatively and independently satisfy the due process requirements of our Constitution and Chapter 91. That obligation has not been met in this case. The university's motion to dismiss should not have been granted for two reasons. First, the standard for granting a motion to dismiss was not satisfied in this case. Because this case presents genuine issues of fact, indistinguishably intertwined between the question of jurisdiction and the merits of the claims presented. Second, it is settled law that courts do have subject matter jurisdiction to consider whether a contested case hearing has been improperly denied. This is based on the five-part analysis in the Supreme Court's opinion in Pele Defense Fund versus Puna Geothermal Venture. To my first point, it is important for this court to know that the complete record is not before you today, as it was not before the Third Circuit Court. The board has refused to transfer the complete record to the courts on the claim that there is no record to transmit because there was no contested case hearing. The very subject of the board's decision on April 9th, 2009, the Mauna Kea Management Plan, is not before the court. The court passed judgment on the question of jurisdiction without reviewing the subject matter that would give rise to that jurisdiction. The question of whether management at issue on Mauna Kea determines the rights, duties, and privileges of specific parties not only goes to the question of whether a court has subject matter jurisdiction, but also to whether practitioners have a right to due process and therefore a right to a contested case hearing. The facts in these two analyses are so indistinguishably intertwined that the court could not adequately make that assessment without going to the merits of our appeal. The fact that the court also made the determination without reviewing the management plan itself only emphasizes the error of this decision. Indeed, the Supreme Court ruled in Norris v. Hawaiian Airlines in 1992 that a motion to dismiss is only appropriate when there is no doubt that the plaintiffs can prove any element of fact.
Ms. Townsend, I think, at least for me, the critical question in this case is whether or not your clients had a right to a contested case hearing. And if you had a right to a contested case hearing, you appropriately requested it orally and in writing and timely appealed. So to me, that's the issue. So point to me what particular statute or rule gave your clients that right to a contested case hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. In the Pele Defense Fund five-part analysis, The first two are the most at issue in today's case. First, was the hearing required by law? The Supreme Court ruled in Bush versus Hawaiian Homes Commission that a hearing can be required by law via statute, rule, or constitution. We satisfy the two latter requirements. First, by rule. The Third Circuit Court correctly held that the administrative rules, Chapter 13-5, require a hearing in this case and direct this court's attention to Section 40A1 of the rules, where it says that a public hearing is required where commercial uses are proposed on conservation land.
But not a contested case hearing, though, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And the nuance of this argument is due in part to the fact that the agency has recently developed a practice of separating and doing things out of order, not in compliance with their own regulations under Chapters 13-1 as well as 13-5. And that's because, in part, they made a decision on the management plan, approving that, prior to deciding whether we had a right to a contested case hearing. If they had done it properly, the contested case hearing decision, a final decision denying that, and the decision to approve the management plan would have happened one and the same. But because they took the processes out of order, it has created somewhat of confusion as to which hearing we should look to. So the April 2009 hearing is important for assessing whether there was a hearing required by law and the decision being made, the subject of the decision.
Is there any law or regulation that requires them to do it as you described? Is there any law or regulation that prohibits them from separating that process?
Honestly, Your Honor, the appellees would argue no. I would point this court to past a practice of the agency and basic tenets of due process that the contested case hearing process is not an administrative appeal. We are not trying, or a motion to reconsider, we're not trying to get the agency to change its mind. A contested case hearing is meant to give that evidence and information and really vet the applicant's case in chief, if you will. That's the purpose of the contested case hearing, to inform the agency in its decision making prior to making a decision.
But following that logic, and I'm just asking you to educate me, so they would still have to go back apply for a permit, correct?
Actually, no, Your Honor.
No.
And this is
after the comprehensive plan was passed?
Yes.
And approved, they don't have to go back and request a permit?
The management plan makes clear that there's a hierarchy of decisions being established. So there are minor actions the university is authorized to undertake that will require no further oversight by the board, no further permitting. And those actions adversely affect the constitutional rights of the appellants. There are some decisions, what are classified as major decisions in the management plan, that would require additional permitting, essentially because they trigger the land use definition in the regulations. But I'll direct the court to the management plan, where you can see that there are specific actions that are authorized, such as if you look at Chapter 5, page 13, they've decided that hunting is not a traditional and customary practice. Chapter 7, page 37, they shall remove all unwanted trails. Chapters 3, 6, and 7 identify that future development will be in the astronomy precinct and on the Northern Plateau.
Let me ask you a question. Assuming for a moment your clients didn't have standing, okay, for a contested case hearing, and the appellees proceeded along those lines to, as you argued, to violate constitutional rights of your clients, traditional, customary gathering rights, religious rights, and whatnot, couldn't you file an action in circuit court to enjoin those activities under the Constitution?
Probably, Your Honor. It would be possible for appellants to experience some deprivation of their rights and in that moment run to the courts to seek protection.
So how does the management plan then prejudice your clients?
Let me offer an example. Management plan is approved. It directs that future development will occur on the Northern Plateau. Years later, a permit for a land use comes before the board, and they say, we're consistent with the management plan because we're proposing to break ground on the Northern Plateau, one of the last pristine and natural areas left on the summit. Plaintiffs challenge that conclusion that you should be allowed to build on the Northern Plateau. And the hearing officer, the board, the courts say, the decision about whether to build on the Northern Plateau was made years ago in the management plan, and you missed your opportunity to challenge that.
But this management plan doesn't approve any, give a new project to Apelles or give new land to Apelles, does it?
No, but it does give new rights, duties, and privileges. It authorizes them to erase trails. It authorizes them to identify what are traditional practices and what are not.
Does it give them rights, or does it basically say this is how they're going to proceed, and you could move to enjoin that in the future in a circuit court action? I mean, you wouldn't be prejudiced. I mean, certainly if, for example, the management plan stood, you certainly in filing a circuit court action would then be arguing the management plan does not give them any right to ban someone from that trail, wouldn't you?
Yes, Your Honor, that is possible. But I have a few concerns I would like to raise. First, the defense would be that the management plan was approved years ago and we missed that chance. Second, it adds an implementation requirement to the law that isn't there now. I mean, now when a decision is made by an agency, there is no requirement that the applicant, the permittee, go and actually do something before the permit can be challenged, before the decision can be challenged. And requiring or adding an implementation requirement, I would argue, adds a chilling effect to a practice. Sense given, if the management plan is not properly vetted, as a contested case hearing would do, then the sense is given to the community, the university is authorized to regulate. It is okay, for example, for their rangers to interfere with practitioners in the act of engaging in customary practice, religious practice, and it chills their practice.
Let me ask you to address the Kalikini case, cited in all the briefs. That would suggest that the only rights and duties that may be at issue would those be University of Hawaii, not your appellants. Could you please address that?
Yes, Your Honor. The analysis as to whether the applicant's rights, duties, and privileges were determined by decision is one side of the same coin as to whether appellants have a constitutional due process claim. So to the extent that an agency's decision determines the rights, duties, and privileges of the applicant, there's a corresponding adverse impact to the constitutional rights of traditional practitioners. And so the analysis in terms of whether under the constitutional due process claim under the first prong of requiring hearing by law, and the analysis under the second element of the Pelley Defense Fund test in terms of whether an applicant's rights, duties, and privileges are determined, are exactly the same analysis. So, and you can see that in the litany of cases that have considered this, from Town to Mahuike to Kalikini, Pash, Pelley Defense Fund, all of these cases recognize that when an agency grants an authority to an applicant, the agency must consider what effect that has on constitutional rights of practitioners. And that wasn't done in this case. And what's interesting to me is that the university actually concedes that our constitutional rights are implicated by the management plan. As you can see from their own brief and their extensive quote of their Kapa'akai due process analysis, it's logically inconsistent to admit that the Kapa'akai due process analysis has been triggered by this decision and then deny a contested case hearing to those practitioners actually asserting those rights.
When you're talking about constitutional rights, are you talking primarily of Native Hawaiian rights that were adopted in the amendments in the 1978 Constitutional Convention?
Yes,
so you're bringing those under the due process, not the due process, life, liberty, or property without those traditional rights that were adopted in 78?
I think to some extent the analysis overlaps, and that is because In the series of cases assessing property rights in terms of due process, courts have acknowledged it's actually a benefit, a constitutional right in terms of practice would fit into that element. So, from the line of cases in Goldberg through now to Mortensen, you can see that courts are recognizing that where citizens rely on guarantees from the government must abide by due process before abridging those.
But, excuse me, given your example of blocking a trail,
yes,
assuming that you had a traditional right to access that trail for gathering or religious practice or whatnot, clearly that wouldn't come under due process without the 1978 amendments, would it?
Right, and that's exactly right. So the PASH rights acknowledged in the 1978 amendments to our Constitution come under that property right as understood in the more recent line of cases.
My question is a little bit broader. Can you explain how your client's constitutional rights are being deprived or denied by the adoption of the management plan?
Okay. The management plan authorizes a variety of actions and activities that that adversely affect our constitutional rights, the rights of the appellants, without any further oversight by the board. This is authorizing them to erase trails, authorizing them to determine what is cultural practice. For example, hunting, according to the university, is not a traditional customary practice. Astronomy, traditional Hawaiian astronomy, is not a traditional customary practice. It directs development in certain places, triggering a decision, making a hierarchy of decisions to where when an actual permit is issued, many of the decisions that would have been made in that permit process have already been made and may not be challengeable in the future. Moreover, the management plan establishes a decision-making system where the university is allowed to play both sides. They are both advocate for construction and protector of cultural practice. They are both permit applicant and permit enforcer. And this kind of decision-making framework can only be challenged at the management plan stage. When we come up to specific permits for a land use, that issue is off the table. It has been decided. And indeed, I think the question here is about process. And that's why the lack of a record is very important. In order to really decide whether our constitutional rights, the rights of the appellants, the practitioners, have been abridged, you must look at the management plan. The management plan is not before you today. And so really the proper outcome today is to remand to the Third Circuit Court, vacate that decision with instructions to decide whether we have a right to a contested case hearing on a full record, on a complete record. And it's because the purpose of a contested case hearing is to really provide that kind of record for judicial review to ensure that there is a fair and meaningful process as required by law. And this is what we learned from reading Pelley Defense Fund.
Are you suggesting that we can't decide whether or not you were entitled to a contested case hearing based on the record before us?
No, Your Honor. I think you can. But I also want to recognize the purview and respect the purview of the Third Circuit. The Kalakini case was decided after the Third Circuit made its decision, and the management plan was not on the record due to no fault of ours. And so the Third Circuit Court really didn't get a good opportunity to make a sound decision. That said, yes, I think the statement of the case, taken as fact under the Morris standard, gives the court the opportunity to determine whether we have a right to contest a case hearing.
You're just giving us an alternative if we choose it.
Yes. Lastly, just to clarify or to ensure, we do meet the remaining three elements of the Pelley Defense Fund test. A final decision and order was issued. There's really no genuine dispute here. We were served with the final decision denying our contested case hearing request on September 1st, and we filed our appeal with the Third Circuit on September 28th. In addition, the practitioners did abide by the agency's procedure for requesting a contested case hearing, and the practitioners do have standing. And if the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Munger?
Good morning, and may it please please the court. My name is Lisa Munger, and I'm appearing this morning on behalf of the Apali, the University of Hawaii. I very much appreciate the opportunity to address the court today, and I'd like to address 3 points. First, I'd like to take the opportunity to address the reply brief, since I exercised restraint in not asking for a surreply. It's good, and I appreciate the opportunity to do so here. Secondly, I wanted to address some of this court's recent rulings with respect to finality, which I think have advanced that doctrine since the time of the briefing below with the circuit court. And finally, I wanted to respond to some of the arguments raised by counsel. And I thought I would begin with the last first, as those are fresh in the court's mind. First, I wanted to address the court's question with respect to the right to a contested case, and particularly to the requirement that it be required by law. And the inquiry was to what statute or rule might one find a contested case. And if you look to the Board of Land and Natural Resources, who has properly adopted rules, which have been before this court on many occasions, the rule requires contested cases for certain types of board actions. Not all board actions require a contested case. For example, a lease could require a contested case. A conservation district use permit, for example, for a telescope or some other development, could require a contested case. But the rule plainly does not provide that there is a requirement for a contested case for the approval of a management plan. That is absolutely not in the rules. And that would distinguish our case, of course, from the Kelekini case, where the court looked to what the rules provided with respect to whether a contested case. So first, no statute or rule provides for a contested case to consider a management plan. And I would note in that regard that the issue that follows is whether there is some constitutional due process right as part of that required by law requirement. And I think you will find that the cases are very clear that the due process right that's intended by this provision is a property right, an entitlement. And I think the case law is very clear there. I would note, as we noted in our briefs, that this point was not raised below. This point was raised for the first time in the reply brief, which we would suggest is too late. Specifically in the statement of the case, the only complaint with respect to due process was related to some apparent defect in the notice of a meeting notice, which is not a
Ms. Munger, is it your position that, assuming arguendo, that the management plan had the force and effect of law or resulted in prohibiting a native Hawaiian from exercising his or her constitutional rights of gathering religious practices as the 1978 Constitutional Convention. Are you saying those constitutional provisions have no weight?
No, not, Your Honor. What I'm saying is this is not the proper forum for a complaint in that regard.
Taking or infringing one of those rights would not amount to a due process violation?
No, I am not aware of a case which finds that that those are property rights within the meaning of the case law and the Constitution. And I think that's a wholly separate issue from the issue of standing. But I am not aware of a case with respect to those being property rights. And I think by the closest that I would find by way of analogy would be the interest in environmental and aesthetic concerns, which the court considered in the Sandy Beach case, which, of course, by the same constitutional convention, this court found the Constitution does provide constitutional rights with respect to a safe environment. And the court did not find that that was a property right requiring a contested case. What the court found in that
case. So traditional Native Hawaiian rights are not entitled to contested case hearings. Is that your position?
It is my position that with respect to the required by law, that is not a property right. And particularly with respect to this case, it was not raised before the board or the circuit court or in the opening brief. And more particularly, it's not implicated by this very document.
Ms. Munger, if I don't mind, forgive me for interrupting, but I'd like to pursue the line of questioning and exchange with respect to the issue of due process. And adding or following Judge Foley's line of questioning with respect to due process. And I think that, you know, from my perspective, that's a very, very important issue here. In terms of setting aside the specific question that Judge Foley asked you with respect to Hawaiian rights, and just focusing on the issue of basic due process, that is to say, the opportunity to be heard, to be have the opportunity to say what needs to be said, and which is a fundamental part of our judicial process. Is there any thing within the regulations or within the context of this case that after the adoption of the management plan that would have allowed the individuals who are concerned that Ms. Townsend represents to have that opportunity to be heard?
Yes. Let me address it both before and after.
And in that line, just let me qualify. One of the questions that I asked Ms. Townsend was, in this particular case, we were only talking about the approval of the management plan and the issue of a permit. So if you could answer my question.
Absolutely. First, with respect to the opportunity to be heard, it's important to focus on the fact that it was the management plan that was before the board. There was an opportunity to be heard. There was a public hearing in accordance with the Sunshine Law. The hearing lasted a very long time. It was all day. So everyone had the opportunity to be heard with respect to the management plan. There was no permit at issue with respect to the management plan. And that is evident in the record from the letter, Exhibit A, to the Notice of Appeal, which sets forth what the Board of Land and Natural Resources approved. And what it approved was this plan after a full hearing. And further to your point, what this plan approval states is most importantly here, that the board has not delegated any authority not already in existence, we have a present lease, to the university with respect to land use approvals, leasing, or public access to Mauna Kea. The letter itself, the letter before the circuit court, states that this does not delegate any authority that is not already in existence under our lease with respect, particularly to council's arguments, to public access. Now, going forward, are there other opportunities to be heard? And yes, the answer to that question is surely yes, because additional conditions of the letter indicate that following the comprehensive plan, it is acknowledged to be the first step in the university's continued management of property that it leases from the state. And it requires that we will submit for review and approval subplans. And those subplans include a cultural resources management plan, a natural resources management plan, a decommissioning plan, which is a plan to take down the telescopes at the end of their useful life, and a public access plan. So there was contemplated at the time that there would be further opportunities to deal with public access, and in fact, that, well, not appearing on the record, that so the opportunity was there, that was in fact done. And additionally, there was an obligation to provide to the department a management and implementation framework. These being the broad guides, it was contemplated that the framework itself would come back to the board, and again, before the board, have the opportunity for a public hearing and for comment.
But never a contested case hearing.
But not a contested case hearing, because
this, as it states on its face, the decision to give this property to the university for a period of 65 years was made long ago. And it is in connection with the management of that property that we're advising what we're doing, but there are no new rights.
So the comprehensive management plan gives your client no right and imposes no duty?
That's correct. It shows the BLNR how we will operate as a steward of this land under an existing lease. That's what it does. And there are opportunities.
So if the decision of the circuit court was affirmed, and at least given the representation of counsel for appellant, that the management plan was blocking a trail, I'm not saying it is, but just for purposes of argument, that the appellants have the right to access, you know, under the estate constitution, and they sued in circuit court to keep that trail open, to have access, you would not appear in circuit court and say the management plan gives you any right to block that access, would you?
No, it's not the management plan that gives us any right to block that access. It's being the tenant under a master lease that gives us the right to manage who will come onto the property and who will not in appropriate circumstances. And surely if that were a complaint, it could be brought to the Board of Land and Natural Resources, it could be brought to the court. This is simply a Chapter 91 proceeding. And I wanted to address, because I think it's related to the question that you just asked me, Your Honor, and that was with respect to whether the opportunities to be heard later. In addition to the various subplans, should there be any additional development, as counsel gave the suggestion that perhaps the development on a different part of Mauna Kea, that of course would come back to the board for a full consideration, and a contested case is provided under the rules for that. And again, the Board of Land and Natural Resources has 8 criteria that it applies in determining whether such a land use can be permitted. You had asked the question when counsel said that the decisions here were made perhaps out of order or not in a proper way. You had asked whether there was any prohibition or any rule concerning that. And I wanted to bring to the court's attention the court's decision in the Hui Ka Kong case, which is cited in the briefs. And in the Hui Ka Kong case versus the Board of Land and Natural Resources, there a permit came before the board. The board decided to grant the permit. It, at the hearing, orally denied the contested case permit, and then later, in accordance with the rule, the Hui did not file the written request. And so in the Hui Ka Kou case, the board's rules are quoted at great length. And what you'll see in the board's rules is that there is a procedure in the board's rules where the board can make its determination with respect to a contested case after it has had its public hearing and made a determination, because the rule provides that you make your written request for your contested case following the board's decision. And we do not contest, the appellants here followed the procedure with respect to requesting a contested case, and the procedure that they followed is one in which a decision can be made before the decision on the management plan or any other board permit for that matter. I wanted to address the issue of Pelikini, and particularly the question with respect to the rights, duties, and privileges that are formed the second part of the first prong of the PASH case, the request the required by law and rights, duties, and privileges. And Pelikini, like innumerable other of the decisions before the court, including the Kaneakapupu case, find that for that portion of the test, you look to the applicant's rights, duties, and privileges, not those who would challenge them. And here, the record is plain from the approval itself that this is not affecting the rights, duties, and privileges. So if the court were to find, even if the court were to find required by law, this would fall out on the second prong, it's an and, on the second prong of that test, that this does not affect the rights, duties, and privileges of the university.
If the comprehensive management plan were part of an application for a conservation district use permit, the application for the permit can be subject to a contested case.
Yes.
And if the plan were part of that, it would then be subject to the contested case hearing, correct?
It could be if they were, as I read the rules, when one brings a board approval, one brings the permit request for which there is a contested case. If you do the management plan at the same time, I don't see a requirement in the rules that the management plan be part of the contested case. However,
well, if it's attached to the permit, wouldn't it make it a part of the contested case then?
Exactly. And so what has happened, I can advise the court that in the past, that has happened. The board has, in consideration of a permit to which the management plan was attached, has considered the management plan during the course of a contested case. So,
and if I may ask, what about their argument that if that happens in the future, there's a permit where this comprehensive management plan is attached to that permit, the appellants are saying that they wouldn't be able to argue the comprehensive management plan, any defects and so forth, because the argument of the board or UH would be it's already put in place, so you can't challenge that. Can you address that argument?
Certainly. I think I would take the position at that time, not that the appellants could challenge the approval of the management plan. However, what I would say is that anything related to that development would be reviewed by the Board of Land and Natural Resources, including any provisions of the plan that the board felt were appropriate to consider in terms of where something should or should not be. The fact that that's mentioned in the plan would not preclude that from being considered as part of the permit. So I think that I do not believe that if I can phrase it, perhaps flip it, I do not believe that the board, in approving the management plan as a framework for guiding current and potential future conduct, in any way meant to limit their authority to do anything. And I do not believe that they did. And I believe that they have complete authority with respect to, you know, to any future permit that comes before them, completely unencumbered or not limited by this plan.
You know, the one thing I don't understand is why a management plan can be subject to a contested case hearing and not be part of a contested case hearing, just based on whether the applicant for a permit attaches it or not. I mean,
I don't think in that case, and perhaps my prior answer wasn't clear, I'm not saying that by attaching it as part of your permit, you suddenly get a contested case on the full management plan. I don't think that that's the case. I think that this is an approval. This is one of the board's decisions that it can make following a public hearing at which it had the opportunity to take a great deal of testimony, and over which it has continuing role and continuing jurisdiction as indicated by its approval. This is a living document. It's an adaptive management. It is not does not grant authorization to do anything.
Does the comprehensive management plan affect any of the rights, any kind of rights, any sort of rights that the appellants have, as argued by Ms. Townsend?
I don't believe that there is anything in this record that demonstrates that.
Is there anything in the plan, as she argues, that does, that's dispositive of any of their rights, cultural rights?
No, because the rights that the appellants have are the university is a landowner, already has rights. Those rights are not changed. To the extent that the appellants have rights vis-a-vis the university, they have them whether or not there is a management plan in place, and whether the university can take certain actions with respect to these appellants is not dependent on the approval of the management plan. It all goes back to that initial lease document and being the tenant.
I have a question. Other than it's required by the rule that a management plan goes to the board for approval, if it doesn't mean anything, why are we doing this? I mean, other than why doesn't the UH just have their own management plan and not be adopted by the board? I mean, the rule requires it, but why?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and of course, as the management plan itself demonstrates, these are management measures that the university has been doing for quite some time and can do. We did not need to get approval from them to do studies, to do surveys, to protect species, to do the various things we're doing under this plan. The board, however, and the community, however, felt it would be good to set out in a comprehensive document what it is the university does, since it's not always clear what landowners and agencies do with their properties, and to set out a framework so that people could review it, comment upon it, and develop more specific plans to guide past and future actions. So I think the short answer is people felt it was appropriate and a good idea to do it. But you're absolutely right. It is not as though we had to do it under our lease or some other provision.
Going back to what I was asking you before, assuming arguendo that the comprehensive management plan did affect some of the rights or any of the rights of the appellants, your argument, as I understand it, is they had an opportunity to be heard vis-a-vis a public hearing, correct?
Correct.
Isn't there a qualitative difference within the concept of due process between a public hearing and a contested hearing?
There is, and that is why, and I think that the Board of Land and Natural Resources rules reflect that dichotomy, where you have management plans which do not take action, do not authorize uses, do not permit uses. For those, a public hearing is appropriate. For other actions, leases, water permits, licenses, conservation district use permits, things that grant privileges and use those resources, those things do require a contested case. And I think that the board has appropriately drawn that dichotomy. I think that dichotomy is consistent with due process. It's consistent with Sandy Beach. It's consistent with the other cases before this court. And in my last moment, I wanted to just comment on the issue of finality. At the time that we briefed this, we did indicate that we felt did raise finality, that the agency's action must be a final decision and order. I think that as I've read,
and I am familiar with the case you cited. I wrote it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. But I felt that in reading that and in sort of reading some of the other recent cases, that the concept of finality that I have now from those cases reflects that the question of finality is not so much whether the order says final, but whether something remains to be done and whether the agency continues to be involved. And I think that a fair argument could be made.
But as far as the comprehensive management plan being approved, that particular plan is
final. Okay. That particular plan is final. But I didn't want the court to think that I had missed that case and missed that the final order of the management plan does contemplate additional actions.
You don't miss much, Ms. Munger. I understand that.
Thank you. And with that, if the court does not have further questions, I'd like to give If I have even 30 seconds left, I'd like to give it to Ms. Gina, who will address this issue on behalf of the state of Hawaii.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Ms. Gina.
There we go. Good morning, and may it please the court. Deputy Attorney General Julie Gina on behalf of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. To quickly address Judge Browning's question about the process and what comes first and what comes second, and what Ms. Munger answered, the actual administrative rule number is 13-1-25, and it requires that a request for a contested case be made prior to the conclusion of the board meeting, the Sunshine meeting. So it can be made at any time, so long as the oral request is made prior to the end of the board
meeting. And that was done in this case?
Yes, it was done.
Thank you.
Now, not all decisions made by the Board of Land and Natural Resources are subject to a contested case hearing, because as we all know, the Department of Land and Natural Resources is vested with a lot. The department is vested with the management, administration, control of public lands, water resources, ocean waters, navigable streams, coastal areas, and minerals of the state of Hawaii. Now, to quote Sharma, that an agency is charged with duties other than rulemaking and adjudication is without a doubt. The decision to approve the management plan was made by the board at a Sunshine meeting held pursuant to Chapter 92, the Sunshine Law. I would like to also quickly address the question raised by Judge Castagnetti regarding the university's rights, duties, and privileges. They have not been affected. To the extent that a management plan is an internal management tool, it is not subject to the due process property interest of the public. And in my briefs, I cited the case of Ohio Forestry. In the case of Ohio Forestry, management plan was adopted by the U.S. Forest Service. And that management plan was intended to guide all natural resource management activities in the national forest. It included the use of land for outdoor recreation, range, timber, watershed, wildlife and fish, and wilderness. The management plan set logging goals and also specified in what areas logging would occur. However, it did not permit logging. The issue was that without the management plan, logging could not occur at all. But with the management plan, logging was more likely. The Supreme Court recognized that the management plan was a tool for agency planning and management. And it found the dispute actually not justiciable at that time, because there was no permit application for logging going on. And similarly, the future implementation of telescope or other development on Mauna Kea will surely come before the board in the form of permit application or other approvals. And at that time, there may be a right to a contested case hearing. And that is consistent with the board's decision and Judge Hara's decision in the circuit court that the management plan was not ripe at the time. Unless the court has any questions, that's it. Thank you so very much. And I would like to ask that this decision of circuit court be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Townsend, rebuttal.
Thank you, Honor. I'd like to begin first by addressing the issue about whether the management plan required a permit. Then to the issue of property rights versus constitutional rights as giving rise to due process. The issue of whether we waived. response to the appellee's position on Hui Kakou'u, and then the agency's analysis of Sharma in the context of Ohio forestry. To begin, nowhere in the rules does it say that contested case hearing is required. DLNR focuses on public hearings. And then the question is whether, under the board's assessment, is a further more comprehensive hearing required based on the decision that was made. In this situation, a public hearing, a Chapter 92 hearing, is required, thus giving rise to the possibility that a contested case hearing is required. Because we look at Section 39 of the regulations, which specifically state, and I shall read it, management plan approvals, A, where required, management plans shall be submitted with the board permit application. The rules anticipate that management plans will have board applications on, be attached to those. And the Supreme Court has taken the position of determining consistency with the rules in terms of function, not form. It doesn't matter that the management plan does not say across the top permit application, because this document authorizes commercial activity, which from leases and subleases to commercial tour ventures and commercial sales, it triggers a requirement for a public hearing under Section 40A1. So a hearing was required by law. The conclusion that the management plan gives the university no authority it didn't already have is part of our challenge. We challenge that conclusion. We think they are given more authority than they already have. And the classic example is the lease. The lease that they have from the department does not grant them exclusive use of the land. But the management plan authorizes them to erect a gate. In addition, there are elements that are missing from the management plan. For example, the management plan is not comprehensive. It does not cover the entire conservation district of Mauna Kea. When would that challenge be made? If we follow the university's argument to its logical conclusion, they would rather have permit by permit piecemeal challenges to the management plan than to really deal with this issue in a comprehensive way. We actually want comprehensive management. We just want to make sure that the plan is properly vetted, that resources are actually protected, and the rights of practitioners are not overburdened.
Aren't you pleased, though, to hear today the university says the plan gives them nothing?
Yeah, I hope I can take it to the bank. What you've been presented with so far is basically the university's case in chief, with no cross-examination, no guarantee against ex parte communication, and no record to verify that the actual legal requirements, like the permit criteria in the regs and the regulations, was actually met. And that's the purpose of a contested case hearing, and that's what we're asking for. Now to the question of entitlement and whether it's property rights or constitutional rights that the court should consider. Direct this court to the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in U.S. v. Roth. Oh, sorry, Board of Regents versus Roth, 1972. And there's an often quoted section from there about how your entitlement can't just be something that you want, right? But the following sentence, the sentence that people rarely quote, is, it is a purpose of the ancient institution of property to protect those claims upon which people rely in their daily lives, reliance that must not be arbitrarily undermined. It is the purpose of the constitutional right to a hearing to provide an opportunity for a person to vindicate those claims. And that is what we're asking for. The kind of subsistence rights, the subsistence practices that Native Hawaiians engage in on Mauna Kea are the kinds of actions that they rely on for their daily lives. We're talking about food and medicine, spiritual advisement. These are basic rights, and they're guaranteed in our Constitution. And if there is a chance that those rights are going to be abridged, the agency must provide for a fair and meaningful opportunity to assert those rights. And that's defined in Chapter 91 as a contested case hearing.
Are you saying that there's a chance they may be abridged or they are being abridged? Is there a difference?
No, there's not a difference. We are arguing that they are being abridged. And if this court has any doubt, though, or an agency has any doubt, they should err on the side of providing process. The Supreme Court's ruling in Roth is brought forward to Hawaii and Aguilar in 1974, which and then after the 1978 CONCON, you can see that those rights identified there, those entitlements, were brought forward in Pele Defense Fund in 1994, in PASH in 1995, and Kapa'akai in 2000. There is no doubt. It is constitutional rights, not a property interest, that gives rise to due process. We did not waive this argument. I draw the court's attention to page 2 of our brief. In addition to page 14 and 16, I will confess it maybe could have been more artfully pled, artfully argued, but the point is that the decision about whether rights, duties, and privileges of the applicant are determined is the same and one and the same analysis as whether the constitutional due process rights of the appellants are affected. The university overstates the court's decision, or overstates the requirement of HR, the administrative rules 13-1-28B. Trying to draw an analogy to huikako'u and the process that the agency has followed, you look at the regulation, it says a contested case hearing shall be held after any public hearing which by law is required to be held on the same subject matter. It does not say decision. And in the past, it has been the agency's practice to withhold the decision until after the contested case hearing is held. So people come to the Chapter 92 Sunshine meeting. They express their concerns and reservations. Those concerns and reservations that rise to a contested case hearing are then addressed in a later hearing that is protected under Chapter 91. And then later, the board reconvenes to make a decision on the subject matter and the outcome of the contested case. Finally, to the agency's arguments on Sharma. Sharma is completely irrelevant. Sharma is specific only to HRS Section 171, Section 39. And that specifically gives notice to people who lease land from the state that they have no rights. They have no, if they default, a lease can be revoked and they have no recourse. That's not this case. This is not internal management. This is the management of a vast public resource. And this is also not Ohio forestry. In the Ohio forestry case, the Supreme Court said there was a great distance between the adoption of the plan and the cutting of the first tree. That's not the situation. The gate at the base of the summit could go up tomorrow. Construction has already been determined will occur on the Northern Plateau. That cuts out the option of considering whether we recycle sites.
Could these have been done without the management plan?
No, because the management plan is required under 13-5-24. And that management plan has to be comprehensive. These two things go together. And I feel like the agency trying to parse them apart is trying to avoid judicial review. And we should not let them do that. To conclude, the Kapa'akai Court tells us that in order for Native Hawaiian rights to be meaningfully preserved and protected, they must be enforceable. That is why the appellants are seeking a contested case hearing, because that is the proper process provided for by law to ensure a just outcome, one that both protects the resources of the mountain, as is required by the law, and the cultural practices of practitioners that rely on them, as the Constitution mandates, as well as ensuring the sustainable use of the vast public resource that is Mauna Kea. Hawaii Supreme Court has repeatedly held that the traditional and customary practices of Native Hawaiians are constitutional rights that deserve the highest process. Its rulings leave no doubt that agencies must ensure a fair and meaningful process when the future of these rights is at stake. The practitioners before you today have done everything to perfect an appeal, but they have been denied the fair and meaningful process provided for by law at every step of this game. The proper remedy for this injustice is to vacate the Third Circuit Court's ruling, remand with instructions to decide our right to a contested case hearing on a full record. In the alternative, if this court finds the record supports our right to a contested case hearing, please mandate it. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel. The court will take the matter under advisement. Thank you very much.